Stuck in the middle with you, as always. I'm Chris. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre.
When you say you, are you referring to our listeners?
Yes.
Okay.
I always feel like I'm stuck in the middle with them somehow.
Yeah. Well, no, you're stuck in the middle and what? Who's on? Anyway, stop going with that. It's Left, Right and Centre for another week.
Start there. Yeah. No, another week. It's great to be back on the air.
On Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM.
Absolutely. And we have... Oh, let's introduce ourselves. First, I'm Matteo, one of the three musketeers tonight.
Mm-hmm. Are there normally three?
We have...
No, I mean, four. As in musketeers. Anyway.
Of us.
I'm Timothy. Christopher's over there.
Hi, I'm over here. I'm Christopher. And missing, the voice you can't hear, the is voice you don't know, someone... or hopefully do know because you're a regular listener, what's his name, guys?
I don't know.
His name's Casey, guys. I don't know why I'm always the one who has to remind everybody.
No, I knew what his name was. I was just asking so that it would bring you into the discussion.
Why didn't you say it?
No, I was trying to include you in the discussion, Tim.
I'm already in the discussion.
You are now because I let you in by asking what his name was.
I'm already pissed off, all right? You don't need to piss me off anymore.
Well, if we want to stop Tim from being pissed off, why not talk about what's on the show tonight instead? That'll make him happy again.
No, that'll piss him off further.
Well, I'm not sure it should do that.
Anyway. By the way, Casey's not on the show. He's feeling sick. So as a disclaimer, Casey is usually the heart and soul of Left, Right and Centre. I wouldn't say that.
I would.
If the show is no good tonight, we blame him.
I'd say we're all equally,
for his absence.
Equally the heart and soul of Left, Right and Centre tonight. We're going to be having a bit of a chat about the student services fee and its failure to pass the Senate.
Mm-hmm. That was tonight. We've also got a jam-packed night of rapid-fire news.
Yeah. As always, you're going to hear Game Show, one of the favourite recent segments.
But with a twist tonight. Oh. I'm just promising a twist.
All right, okay.
Because I'll be running it instead of Casey in his absence.
So you're going to be biased in favour of yourself?
Well, is that the twist, Tim? I'm running it. I won't be involved. So you go. I'll be doing a quiz for you two.
Right. Is that the twist?
No. We're waiting to see. Because
that would be a crappy twist.
It does sound to me like the twist is Casey's not here, so he's not doing it. So you're doing it.
It's like a twist of M. Night Shyamalan rubbish proportions. Let's hope for something a bit better than that.
Speaking of another twist, what do you reckon to a song, guys?
Right. I'm not sure how much of a twist that is, but yeah, always happy to play.
No,
some music.
I think it's a massive twist.
Songs on the radio.
We don't play songs on the radio.
Yeah, normally it's something else on the radio.
Until now.
Yeah.
The student services and amenities fee is essentially a proposal from the Labor government, has been championed by the youth minister for youth, Kate Ellis, essentially as the Labor Party's replacement of compulsory student unionism, which was defeated under the Howard government, which is essentially a system whereby university students would be compelled to join and pay a fee to the student union, and they would in turn provide certain services.
Yep.
Now that was removed under the Howard government, and since the Labor Party began, they'd been looking for a way of reinstituting some sort of compulsory student services fee, but without actually going the whole hog to compulsory student unionism.
Or at least without using the name.
Yeah, well, exactly. This is something, this whole fee is something that I'm quite passionate about. I'm quite passionately opposed.
Yep.
But I think I'll lay off to Matteo here so he can give you a bit of a rundown on what's happened in the Senate.
Well, your passionate opposition to it is matched by a few politicians to the right of the spectrum, amongst them our Left, Right and Centre favourite, Steve Fielding, Family First Senator. He actually, his vote was essentially one of the deciding ones. He sided with the coalition in flagging it down. The vote was actually tied in the Senate 34 to 34, so it didn't pass, of course. Now, the Rudd government's been spending a lot of time defending this bill against claims that essentially it would have amounted to compulsory student unionism. Student groups and universities, the president of the National Union of Students, David Barrow, he's come out quite obviously strongly in opposition to this verdict that it didn't pass. They vowed to continue campaigning for it despite its failure. And so I guess we're asking, is the student services fee, or was the student services fee, a wolf in sheep's clothing?
Oh, well, I don't know whether wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, I think there's a lot made of the return to compulsory student unionism. I don't really think it was that, but I still have quite deep problems with it.
Mm. I, Tim, I understand what you're saying, but to a certain extent, from my point of view, the only legitimate criticism, really, of compulsory student unionism was the way that funds were sometimes used for political purposes. And and as Matteo outlined when he was talking about the Rudd government's defence, it would have been set out in this bill that the funds couldn't have been used for political purposes, which to me addresses one of the main objections to it, and I don't see...
Yeah, okay. I understand. Firstly, with regard to the political donations, I think there's a quote here from one of the senators, one of the Liberal Party senators, if you just bear with me for a second. Mason was pointing out that he thought the protections against political use of the funds were very weak in the bill, and I would have to agree with him. I read the bill and the regulations, and the money couldn't be given by the university to an organisation to be used for political purposes, but I saw no protections for it to be using a couple of things down the line. There were provisions for it being used in advocacy, but if you ask me, that wasn't the big deal. First, like the first problem, obviously, with compulsory student unionism, I think, is freedom of association issues. Yes. I'm not a huge one for talking about rights, but I think it's ridiculous that you should compel a person to become a member of an organisation as a, you know, if they want to get a tertiary education. But the other big problem I had with it is where does the government and student unions get off slapping such a ridiculous financial burden, a compulsory financial burden? Now,
Tim, no, hold on. Society imposes all sorts of fees, you know,
exactly,
for the sake of providing services. I don't see how this is necessarily any different.
But tertiary students are a group of people
exactly
that need... They're not well-to-do.
Hold on. But, you know, the poor are still taxed to certain levels.
Yeah, but to a lower extent. And students are a member, part of our society. Anyway, the point that Kate Ellis would make about this, under this this program actually had a sort of a hex system whereby you could offset, you know, or rather you could put off the payment of these in sort of the same way the hex problem. But, you know, much as I appreciate that as a plan, the fact is that it's not available to people who aren't Australian or New Zealand citizens. International students were still forced to pay $250 a year up front for this, increasing what is a serious problem for poverty in international students,
I was going to say, I think, I don't know, one of the problems of the student system, apart from the fact that a lot of students wouldn't actually have known where this, you know, compulsory payment was going, was actually that there seems to be no progressivism inherent in it, because it's applied uniformly to students, and not all students get the same essentially return from the services, from university tertiary services, yet they still have to pay the same amount. And also, an organisation like the National Union of Students, they've been speaking a lot about the need to reform student income support, which I actually tend to agree with. I think at the moment the current system is very, very paltry, and yet they've sided so readily with the idea of imposing an extra financial burden on students, a lot of whom, struggle to afford their education as it is.
Mm. Well, my problem further with the National Union of Students is, I mean, I think they do a lot of great stuff. A lot of their campaigns on student welfare and on other social issues, I think, are commendable. But in this situation, it's the overt lefty bias, I'm afraid, in the National Union of Students and the unionist sort of perspective, as is understandable, has really...
I mean, perish the thought that a union of students, in fact, has a unionist perspective.
But what has happened here is that an organisation that purports to represent students is actually not doing that. And I think hold on, if I just finish. I think there's a much larger portion of students out there who are opposed to the student services fee than I think the support of the NUS makes out. Sorry, go
well,
on.
Well, Tim, first of all, I think that's an extremely difficult claim to verify, and if you're going to make that sort of statement, you should come to the table with some sort of figure. But I would also say that I don't think accusing them of a lefty bias is really helpful. I don't think it really gets to the core of the issue, because I think the National Union of Students, whatever you might say about them, are acting in what they think is you know the greater good of the student body. And even if that's misguided, I don't think talking about it in this way is entirely helpful.
I just wonder if the majority of university students, perhaps it would be fair to say the majority are not politically attuned, whether they would really appreciate their national union representing their interests in favour of imposing this cost on them, really. Mm. This is not, no matter what the Liberals tried to tell us, a return to compulsory student unionism. I don't think any of us think that. But I think that those days have been and gone. So I mean, of course, it was just a bit of haymaking, I think, from the Liberal Party saying that it was that.
Mm.
And I think that didn't get to the core of the issue either. But I think that there are problems with the Student Services and Amenities Bill itself. And I think it was just a case of bad politics as well as maybe not the best policy.
Mm. Well, unfortunately, there's left, right, and centre power. I think we've given... Matteo and I certainly have given this quite a ribbing. And if there's anybody out there who's quite peeved about our take on this issue, feel free to give us a call on 8303 5000. Tell us what you think.
And let's go to this.
Well, good evening. Many of you will no doubt be aware of the increasing absence of Casey Briggs from the radio waves. 5 weeks ago, an investigation was begun with the intent of shedding some light on the matter. What we found was no less than mildly interesting. When our search for Casey began, we had few leads, and initial attempts to follow them up proved to be, like a bad juice, fruitless. Routine inquiries began with little result until a breakthrough call was received on the 49th of September. What follows is a recording of that conversation.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello?
Yes. Yes, I can hear you. What do you want?
Oh, my name is John Harding. I'd like to report an incident involving Casey Briggs.
I see. Do you mind if I record this conversation?
Actually, I'd rather you didn't, and I'd like to remain anonymous.
Ah. Well, very well, Mr. Harding. What can you tell me?
Well, I was in my living room the other day, and suddenly I could hear Casey's voice as if he was in the room with me.
I see. Well, that's fascinating, Mr. Harding. Was he in the room with you?
No, it's just as if he was speaking in my head.
I see. And what happened next?
Well, there were more voices, and they joined in. And then they started arguing. And then I could only hear music.
Right. That in fact, sounds like the radio, Mr. Harding.
Yeah, I suppose it does.
Could it, in fact, have been the radio?
Oh, well, I suppose.
Thank you for your call, Mr. Harding.
There's more...
Acting on the information I received during this call, I caught the first plane to Gloucestershire, in the south of England, where I continued the search on foot. Days passed, and having asked 7 people at random if they had seen him, and having received no affirmative answers, I began to lose hope, until one day, when I accidentally captured the following audio clip while attempting to buy an arse hat in a busy flea market.
I'm going to talk quickly. I'm Casey, the host with the most. I boast the most, and I am the host.
It was clear that I was on the right track. I hired a donkey and began the long trek through the woods to America. Once there, I booked myself into a hotel and by coincidence noticed that booked into a room down the corridor was one Casey Briggs. I knocked repeatedly on his door to no avail. Feeling my attempts were inexorably leading to a dead end in the form of not finding the person I was looking for, I booked myself in to see a concert that night performed by Mike Oldfield. The man, that is, not the Goldfield. As a last-ditch effort, I asked both of my immediate neighbours in the arena if they knew of Casey Briggs, and their negative responses and colourful language served only to send me spiralling deeper into despair at my inability to locate a single person with no information as to their whereabouts. Until Mike Oldfield took to the stage. It is my pleasure to reveal to you now that the reason that Casey Briggs hasn't been appearing on radio is due to a double life. You see, Casey is... Mike Oldfield. In light of this evidence, I have decided to let him live free in the wild, composing and playing face-melting guitar solos. Now you may ask, what are the chances of finding Casey with no information as to his whereabouts, in America especially, considering frequently, even daily sightings of him in Adelaide, South Australia? Why should someone seeking to hide themselves from the radio disguise himself as the world's greatest progressive rock composer? How did I get from fictional Gloucestershire to America by donkey? And what is an arsehat? For those answers and more, tune in next week for a special episode of Left, Right and Centre, headed by Mike Oldfield. I'm Jean-Paul Georgenringo. Good night.
Are you ready for this?
For what?
This.
Well, I guess we are.
That was a bit loud. As usual, rapid-fire news... Not as usual, delivered by me. First of all, according to ABC, Bob Dylan was arrested last week in Long Branch, New Jersey, after a police officer failed to recognise him. The officer then proceeded to proceeded to go to earnest lengths to ensure that the hooded, dishevelled, rain-soaked music legend was, in fact, who he said he was. Mr. Dillon, 68, was arrested after the occupant of a house with a for sale sign posted outside it called the police to report an eccentric-looking man standing in his yard in the middle of the pouring rain. Despite explaining to the police officer that he was in New Jersey on tour with Willie Nelson and John Mellencamp, the humorously named duo, the officer took Dillon first to his hotel and then to the tour bus where, eventually, his identity was revealed. Now, guys, some will say that the police officer made a mistake here, but given how much of a jerk Bob Dylan is, didn't he deserve it? For that matter, shouldn't he be hung, drawn, and quartered?
I think that's a little bit harsh, but Dylan is a bit of a jerk.
All I'm going to say, I was shaking my head and I have my hands on my hips right now. I'm all for finding out both sides of the story. I'm sure there was some reason she decided to do
it. I think it was that he looked like a homeless man.
Yeah, but did he hear the words music legend in amongst all that? Music legend. He should be afforded some respect.
No, but it's kind of his fault. Doesn't he have a history of intentionally seeking an anonymity?
Yes, not homelessness.
Well,
but anonymity suggests people won't know who he is, you jerk.
No, but well, hardly. I don't think he's cultivated a reputation of anonymity.
No, but he attempts to you know.
I think he pretends to attempt to in order to cultivate more of a cult personality. If you ask me.
A judge in Illinois has freed a man who had been in jail for 3 weeks after yawning loudly during a sentencing hearing. The 33-year-old Clifton Williams had been found to be in contempt of court on July 23 after he let out a loud yawn, which was described as boisterous, while in court for his cousin's sentencing on a drug charge. On releasing Williams, the judge gave him a short lecture, explaining that he had not been in prison for yawning as such, but rather making a sound that was offensive to the court. Yawn?
Bodily functions are now held to be in contempt of court.
Well, I don't know. Is there any other contemptible...
Well, this is the beginning of the end. And loud yawns, I don't think... They can really be boisterous. I think they're more...
Oh, what, you disagree with the judge?
Mateo, careful what you say about the judge.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah.
Because, remember, this is the law and order, you know, thingy we're playing.
Well, I certainly don't think the sound effect excuses the judge.
What is this? Christopher...
A Japanese construction worker has... Oh, God.
You have gone mad with power.
A Japanese construction worker has been arrested for throwing his own feces at women passers-by from a motorcycle in two separate incidents, Adelaide Now reports. The 39-year-old Tatsuya Moriguchi reportedly handed himself in after making the drive-by attack for the second time. In the first incident, Moriguchi reportedly relieved himself outdoors just before getting on his moped and throwing the feces at the head of a woman in her 20s. A police official explained that, "I have no idea what kind of penalty he may face. I have not heard about such a case before." Now, guys, the suspect apparently told investigators he did it because he felt frustrated when his work didn't go well. Sorry? Well,
a construction worker?
A construction worker. His work didn't go well, so he threw feces at two women.
And then handed himself in?
Yeah.
Why?
That's such a bizarre way.
There are like three or four levels of stupid there.
Yeah. I don't understand. You're trying to impress a lady friend. That's a bad idea.
I don't think he was trying to impress the lady. I mean,
it's not like he'd be so dumb as to think that throwing feces at a woman would make him attractive.
My point was, because I would have continued, that essentially, that's fine. Anything he would have actually attempted, anything constructive he'd have attempted through this would not have been met.
And he's a construction worker.
What is...
Well, constructive.
You broke your own.
I know, but I dinged myself, so I... Crime and punishment. According to Yahoo News, Austrian postal workers are frustrated that rescuers had to be deployed twice this week to break open large mailboxes after two children locked themselves inside in entirely separate incidents. Apparently, the two incidents occurred when boys, 4 and 8 respectively, climbed into mailboxes and found themselves unable to get out, requiring rescuers to use welding torches and bolt cutters to get the boxes open. Now, guys, Austrian authorities have allegedly described these incidents as pranks. Is it fair to say, then, that the Austrian Postal Service doesn't give such hijinks their stamp of approval?
Ha! Very good.
We've seen train surfing. We've seen happy slapping, and now what? Mailbox squatting? Is this the least threatening youth rebellion you've ever seen?
What? Just sitting in a mailbox,
locking yourself in a mailbox, and then having to get someone to help you out.
Yeah, well, it's you know, how many occasions was it? On how many occasions?
Twice. In a week, though, Tim.
Yeah, but you'd think they'd learn. I mean,
well, I guess the Austrians are reasonably sedate people, so is it, maybe this is the furthest the Austrian
Tim, sedate is a verb.
Tim, can I just ask you?
No.
You say presumably they'd learn. What do you mean? That was separate instance. They're children. It's not like they hear about the other ones.
Then the Austrian media is it clearly at fault? This is a social.
Well, clearly, it has been reported.
Yeah. Well, no. If look, if you've got children who are putting themselves in post, you know, in post boxes,
mailboxes, rather than post boxes
is not a real thing. Then you know, I think the state has an obligation to alert youth that this is not a
not a wholesome activity.
Well, and not a safe one at that.
I'd tend to the suggestion that children rarely listen to their parents, let alone the state.
Let alone the state. I think the mailboxes are just too big.
Yeah, that's a good thought, actually. I think so, too. Explaining to a court why he was caught speeding, British footballer Grant Leadbitter, who plays for Sunderland in the English Premier League, said he thought the police car following him was actually full of fans from Sunderland's rival Newcastle chasing him in order to fight. Leadbitter was reportedly on his way home from a big night out, which had ended with an altercation between Leadbitter and a group of Newcastle fans, who, obviously, Leadbitter thought were pursuing him. According to The Guardian, he explained that, "My heart was beating fast, I was scared, and I wanted to get home as quickly as possible." That seems a pretty reasonable explanation to me, guys, don't you think? Oh, wait, why would the Newcastle fans, why the hell would they be in a police car?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm pretty sure if there's a police car, you would assume they're not Geordies.
What colours are police cars in the UK, does anyone know? Are they black and white?
I don't think they're black and white. I think that's unlikely.
Well, still, I mean, he must have had a reason for a suspicion and not maybe just because he'd had a big night. Perhaps he'd thought that the Newcastle fans were being a bit crafty, trying to pull a fast one on him.
So either one of them was a police officer or they stole a police car just to get into a fight with him?
In which case, he's pretty much done anyway. For those of you out there who aren't football literate, we say black and white because those are the colours of the Newcastle Football Club.
Mm-hmm. They're called the Magpies or more, derogatorily, the barcodes. That was not a word.
Garden guru Don Burke has used his radio show to launch a scathing attack on MasterChef Donna Hay over her endorsement of parsnips, which he reportedly described as an affront to human dignity. Mr. Burke reportedly ranted that, "I'm outraged, I'm angry, I'm upset, I'm crushed. In all of those things, I'm all of those things and a lot more. If you get that appalling newspaper today, the Sunday Telegraph, and get out Sunday Magazine, that wretched Donna Hay has got 2 pages of parsnip recipes. I respect pigs, I like pigs, but I wouldn't give my pet pig parsnips." The response has been equally fierce, you could say, with one turnip grower labelling Mr. Burke's comments un-Australian. AusVeg spokesman Angelo Lamatina, that's a typical feature of Rapid Fire News, getting names confused, was somewhat more reserved in his comments, stating that Don Burke is entitled to his view, but his expertise is probably more in the area of plants than vegetables. Burn. Guys, Don Hay isn't happy about this either. Would it be correct to say that Don has bitten off more than he can chew?
Ah, good one.
Did the third person to speak on the matter actually say burn?
No, I'm pretty sure that was an editorial edition.
That was Chris's addendum.
Editorial comment, Matania.
Right. I really don't understand how Don Burke's gotten himself so worked up about this.
Like, parsley is crap.
Parsnips.
Parsnips. Oh, parsnips. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Parsley's just a garnish. No one...
Yeah.
No one really cares one way or another.
I don't think Don has a big problem with parsley.
Parsley. No, I doubt it because it can be used decoratively. Yeah. You can have a decorative herb garden.
And it does add just a subtle...
Anyway, we're talking about something different. Not parsley.
Parsnips.
You got that confused. Parsnips.
Yeah,
do you know what a parsnip is, Tim?
I assume it's like red.
Oh, I think it's red.
That's an answer.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Tony Abbott has thrown his support behind an anti-drugs program for parents after his daughter described him as a lame, gay, churchy loser, according to The Age. Abbott says that at the time he had been trying to talk to his 18-year-old daughter about the perils of drug abuse with what he says he thought to be a worthy moral exhortation. Abbott has been criticised by a manager of the gay youth support group 2010, who says that Abbott should not have repeated his daughter's words. He explained, "Young people in their school environment are hypersensitive to the use of words like gay with negative connotations. Now, that last bit was pretty relevant, but the question I'd like to ask you is, are we sure his daughter is 18 and not 18 months?
Why would she be 18 months?
Because I'd suggest that the insult, lame, gay, churchy loser, is more indicative of an 18-month old than an 18-year-old.
Yeah, but I'd also say that those words she chose aren't quite indicative of an 18-month-old child's vocabulary.
Well, it was just 18-month sounded better when after 18 than like
yeah, than
12-year-old or 8. Yeah.
8-year-old.
Well, yeah, it is less accurate though. Anyway, we're a lame, gay, churchy loser. Well, so that's making,
Tim, I guess the question is, if he is a lame, gay, churchy loser, and I don't
Why are you using it now?
No. Look, I'm not using it in a negative sense. I'm saying if he is, does that mean he's not practicing what he preaches?
You mean uncool, churchy, and homosexual?
I'm saying if he's homosexual, is that a, you know, like, is that hypocrisy
on Tony Abbott's part? It probably is.
No, I think this revelation is coincidentally timed with the release of his new book, his memoirs. I think a bit of a publicity stunt from the Abbott family.
Not a bad
scandal.
Theory.
Yeah, scandal. Well, exactly. Scandal sells books.
Bang. A 25-year-old Egyptian waitress who is reportedly addicted to men has allegedly been arrested after claiming that she married 7 times in 45 days. The woman who worked in a tourist resort has apparently been arrested on charges of polygamy, as she wrote unofficial marriage agreements before beginning any new relationship to circumvent the fact that sexual relationships out of wedlock are illegal in Egypt. The 25-year-old was reportedly caught after she met and married a contractor who discovered one of the marriage agreements dated only a few days before their marriage had taken place. I think the shortest gap between the two was something like 10 hours between 2 marriage agreements. It's not bad. So, Tim, how do you feel about this?
Oh, well, there are many, many complicated issues involved there about personal liberty and polygamy.
No, Tim, I'm going to have to cut you off. I was actually asking for like a witty one-liner rather than a reasoned, thoughtful discussion.
Tim's not the guy you go to for witty one-liners.
Well, who do you go for?
Well,
go to
none of us, really.
Well, that's normally Chris's job. Chris.
Wow. Zing.
No, shut up.
No, that
Zing. Was... Zing. Zing. Hit the button.
Okay. A 29-year-old skimpy barmaid accused of showing too much flesh says police have more important things to do than catching unaddressed skimpy barmaids. The surprisingly normally named for a skimpy barmaid, Megan Brooks, appeared in court in Fremantle to face charges of being immodestly dressed on licensed premises today, where the magistrate suggested the charges would probably be dropped. According to WA Today, the court was told that the accused was wearing black lace French knickers with a buttock exposed. But Mr. Dobson, Megan Brooks's defence attorney, wanted to know which buttock was exposed, as well as the extent of the exposure. It was also stated that Mrs. Brooks' nipples were erect, although Mr. Dobson questioned whether that too was criminal conduct. Miss Brooks added to the comments of her brief and the magistrate, saying that there's more important things out there for police than sort of sneaking around undercover, hoping to catch skimpy mermaids wearing not very much clothing. Even if that's true, don't you guys think the police action demonstrates an important point, that skimpy clothing can leave barmaids exposed to prosecution?
Oh, very good. We should never use the word skimpy again.
I don't think we should skimp on the use of a very good word, Tim.
If I might take you back there, Chris, you read that out very well. Was there mention of a charge called being immodestly dressed on a licensed premises? That cannot actually be a thing.
Yeah, no, apparently it is.
That is amazing.
Well, can I just say I was utterly persuaded by the logic of the barmaid who said that surely the police should have better things to do instead of trying to justify their entry into a licensed premises, perhaps.
There was one comment, I think, made by, again, the defence attorney, and there are so many good quotes by the defence attorney. I think we should hire him for our show.
Right. Make him a friend of the show.
And he said, you know, that, you know, a thinly veiled excuse for police to check out barmaids.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's ridiculous.
It's like, right, oh, that's why we were in this bar.
And I'd say furthermore that until the police, because as I understand it, they've just said buttock was exposed, and I think the question of how much was exposed. And,
which one? Crucial.
Which one, and to what extent, like what amount of exposure constitutes an offence needs to be clarified, otherwise they've got no case, apart from all the other issues.
Evidently no amount of exposure amounts a case, so that's the way it should be. Immodestly dressed on licensed premises.
Especially when it is, you know, I suppose a skimpy, you know, a bar where... Mm. The barmaids are meant to be skimpily attired. Plan. Yeah,
yeah. Gotta have your standards.
I think, I mean...
game show. Many people will remember in the last couple of weeks we've tried something different on Left, Right and Centre. We've had a segment called Game Show, as you just heard the theme, normally run by Casey. And normally... It turns into a Tim hate exhibition. It's essentially just
we do have to get our kicks somehow.
Ridiculous power trip from our normal host Casey.
Yeah.
And so I've decided to throw in a bit of a twist. I'm actually going to do a fair game show.
Is it going to be called a? Are you saying it's a fair game show, or is it a fair game show?
This is a fair.
John Howard might say, "No, this is give everyone a fair game."
This is just going to be even. Okay, I've got a set of questions.
You're going to give everyone.
You guys get to choose what they are. You won't actually know the question, but you'll get to pick a number, and it's actually going to be fair. Unlike when Casey does it, when we actually get complaints about how unfair it is.
Tim, we've got one complaint. I'd just like to point out one complaint.
We've had two.
One from you.
One from you.
Oh well.
If you count multiple those. Ones yeah. from you.
Okay, so what I've got is I've got six questions, and how this is going to work is that I'm going to ask each of you to pick a number consecutively, and sure. then you get that question. So, Matteo, would you like to go first?
Sure.
Pick a number between 1 and 6.
3.
Okay. Is that
correct?
Yes. Well, no, it's that's not actually the question. These are multiple choice. Right. These are multiple choice. What is a lexicon? And I'll accept the most correct answer. A formal icon, a dictionary, or a Toyota car?
Oh, that's B, I'd say.
Which one's B? Just say the actual thing.
A dictionary.
Okay, I'm going to give Matteo 1 point. Ooh, very good. Matteo gets 1 point. Christopher, pick a number between 1 and 6 that is not 3.
2.
Okay. What was the password for the D-Day invasion? The code name. Was it Churchill, Mickey Mouse, or Overlord?
C, Overlord.
It's Overlord. Very well done, Chris.
Know my Second World War history.
Okay, Matteo. Number between 1 and 6, that is not 2 or 3.
So I can't pick 2?
You cannot pick 2.
Huh.
If you pick 2, you just get 0 for this question. So it's currently 1 or...
5.
Picks 5, okay. Which Australian state was the first to have compulsory voting?
I'm not going to know the answer to this.
The options are the states.
Fair enough. State. I'm going to say it was New South Wales.
Incorrect, I'm afraid. It was Queensland. Christopher, 1, 4, or 6?
1.
What is a capon? Is it fried bread in super, a castrated rooster, an ornamental cape?
It's A.
I'm afraid it's B, a castrated rooster. So, we're at 1 all, and we've got 1 question left for each of you. Matteo, 4 or 6?
4.
Who was the oldest Beatle? Lennon, McCartney, Harrison, or Starr?
Am I picking from the 2 living ones?
No.
It was, that was Ringo Starr, wasn't it?
It was Ringo Starr, yeah. Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So Matteo's on 2. Chris, you need to get this one to tie the game.
What are my choices? We'll
have a tiebreaker. Well, you have to have question 6.
That seems hardly fair. I'm not sure this is a fair game show, Tim.
I don't
have any choice. You said we all got choices.
I don't get any choice.
No, Matteo went first, and therefore...
But you don't know anything about the questions, so it is actually fair. How many lines are there in a sonnet?
I know that... Oh, no, actually, it depends what type of sonnet, Tim. Because there are, like, in your typical Shakespearean sonnet, 12 lines.
Right.
No, sorry, 14.
Whoa, you changed that just soon.
No, but I thought about it. 3, 4 okay, couplets and then okay, a 2 couplet.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid it's 2 all. So we're going to have a tie-breaking question.
Right.
And I'm gonna ask the question, and the first person to yell out the correct answer is the winner. Okay.
This will end so poorly.
Okay.
This is not going to sound good
on the radio. Of the normal left, right, and centre hosts, who is the worst?
Casey.
Well, I'm afraid Chris was fastest, and it was the correct answer. Casey is actually the worst. Of the four hosts.
No, I actually don't feel too bad about losing.
Okay, well, good. So Chris, yet again, is the winner of Game Show.
He's just got a knack for it.
Okay.
He really does.
The Game Show.
I think handshakes all around. Thank you, Quizmaster, for running a fair game point.
All right, and I'm pleased to report that thus far we've had no complaints about Game Show segment.
No. Tim, that is not true. That is not true at all. We had one in the break.
But we have caught you out with a liar here, Tim.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're a liar. You spoke to him. We had a caller, one James, and he was very angry because he thought Game Show was very arbitrary, this segment, and he preferred Casey's method of running it. And I'd like to say, furthermore, that he would like you to apologise. And I think it would be very good if you did it live on air, in the same mould as Kyle and Jackie O. And I think you should, are you man enough to do that?
No. No, I'm not going to apologise.
Does that mean you're not enough? You're not man enough to apologize.
No, I don't have anything to apologize for. And I think this particular character has shown himself to be capable of petty problems with the
film. I must admit, I promised our caller that I'd do that I'd get you to apologize, and I failed in that. So, James, I'm sorry. I'll work on him again.
I have no part in this. I'm not really apologetic. I'm apologetic because I didn't win game show again.
Tim, you mentioned you were actually pretty bloody pissed off before, didn't you?
I'm very, very angry, guys.
Why? And, Tim? Is it sport related?
It is sport related, and thankfully, because Casey isn't here, we can actually talk about sport.
Yeah.
He normally says no sport, but I'm pissed off, and this is about a particular issue.
Tim, hurry up. What is it?
UEFA should be ashamed of themselves because Celtic have been drawn to play Arsenal in the qualifying stages. How is it that the biggest team in Scotland has to go up against somebody like Arsenal in the qualifying stages of the Champions League? What is that? One of them is going to be knocked out. Celtic are going to get knocked out because they've got to play at friggin' Emirates.
Tim, look, I honestly wish I had not asked you that. That is the most tedious... You didn't explain what UEFA was. You didn't explain what any of this... They don't even know what sport.
For the non-initiated into the game of football...
Tim, do you know what they call this?
What's that?
Bad radio.
I'll just finish up by saying that Tim is essentially displeased because his team of choice have been drawn to play
a better team.
A better team, who they will lose to over two matches, and Tim is a little bit
scared, unhappy.
Perhaps they should have done a little bit better last season.
I'm mad.
Well, look, then they wouldn't be in this mess.
That's pretty much all we've got time for, guys.
It's been a great show. Game show, I think, was a particular highlight. despite certain individuals.
Whatever, Tim, whatever.
And I think any odd occasional technical mishap just added character.
Oh, no. You don't mention technical mishaps. We've been experimenting with a sort of technique where members of the team sort of speak over songs, just single words.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
And
that's an example of... I wasn't actually apologising. I was... Anyway,
maybe you can apologise now for that slight bit of awkwardness.
We've now got a contribution from our friends of the show, Man Bites God.
Here we are.
Yeah, show favourites.
Good night.
Yeah, good night, everyone.